What's up, y'all? It's Zach with Living Corporate. Look, Living Corporate is a digital media network, right? Not just a single podcast. Okay, hear me again. I said a digital media network, not just a single podcast. So when I say digital media network, what does that mean? Digital media network means that we're creating all sorts of different types of media. All sorts of different types of media. Podcasts, vodcasts, blogs, right? Talk chat spaces, you know what I mean? Social media content, right? Threads, things of that nature. All types of content. And what is that network? What is this content all meant to do? It's meant to center and amplify Black and brown people at work. Center and amplify Black and brown people at work. So often in this whole DEI space, or whatever you want to call it, DEI, IED, JEI, you know what I'm saying? The RZA, Wu-Tang, whatever you calling it, right? Shout out to Wu-Tang forever. But whatever you calling it, there's this common thread of centering of the most overrepresented, right? So what am I really trying to say? A lot of this DEI work centers white people and white feelings. That's really what this space has devolved into, or maybe it always was. I mean, honestly, we've talked about that ad nauseum for the past several years. But the point is that Living Corporate exists to center and amplify the marginalized voices, Black and brown, queer, Black and brown disabled, Black and brown women, Black and brown trans, Black and brown non-binary, Black and brown first gen, Black and brown people at work. That's what we do. And we interview executives, elected officials, activists, artists, influencers, the list goes on and on and on. And we're always, always, always bringing it back to the experiences of the most marginalized. And we're speaking truth to power by challenging the very systems that exist and continue to persist to benefit everybody but Black and brown people at work. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we do. We're not really here to like coddle or pat big corporations on the back that make billions of dollars every year. We're here to really have authentic, real conversations in a corporate world. Okay? That's what we're trying to do. And that's what we're not trying to do. That's what we're doing. Shout out to the Living Corporate team. I'm so excited about this conversation you're about to hear. We'll be back. See you soon. Will Cooper.
What's up, brother?
What's up, man? How you doing, man? Long time coming.
I know, man. We've been talking about this for 6 months.
A while, man.
It's been a while.
Yeah, for sure. It's a pleasure, man. Listen, you know, it's interesting. I think about the types of conversations we have here, and I don't know if I've had a lot of folks who are focused on, like, brand partnerships for the sake of like market eminence and things of that nature, footprint expansion, sure. Things of that. Like, I'm really curious. Like, talk to me about your journey in this like marketing, strategic marketing space, and how you got to do this work, and then also what led you to find like to really be at Heartbeat now. Like, that's what I'm really curious
about. Got it. It's a long story. So I hope you got a little time, Zach. But so I graduated in 2010. I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in Wisconsin. And I originally started out in the construction industry, not so much of the like building the buildings myself, but working for a large scale manufacturer of tools and equipment. It's a company called Milwaukee Tool. I knew that I did well in front of groups. I was a good speaker. Working with people is something that came natural to me and something that I enjoyed. Building things, building businesses, supporting nonprofits, building community has always been strengths of mine and things that I wanted to do. So I kind of fell into this work just because from that skill set. And moved around quite a bit. So I was in Chicago and Houston and Milwaukee, and I was in New York for 8.5 years. And I was about 27, 28. I was what it essentially amounts is like a regional partnerships manager. So I had 7 people reporting to me in New York, 2 in Boston and 1 in upstate New York, which was a great a great thing for my career. The only problem was I was never particularly passionate about the construction space. And so I was pretty unhappy with that aspect of it. And it was having an effect on me. So, but the good thing is if you can speak, if you do well with building things, if you can, network and build relationships and understand the process of building community, you can do well in a lot of different fields. So when I was about 28, I gave my poor mother a heart attack and said I was going to, like, you know what, Mom, I'm going to follow my dreams. I'm going to go into media and entertainment. I've always loved movies and stories and TV. I'm going to go into this field. I'm going to leave this six-figure job that I had when I was 27, 28, and I'm going to take a 75% pay cut and move into media and entertainment. Which was, of course, really hard, but it was a really good decision. And I had the advantage of, if you understand people, if you understand how to build relationships, if you understand, if you're a competitive person, I have an athletic background, so that's really helped me a lot in this space. Regardless of the industry, partnership work all has the same components. Maybe you might be partnering on digital content or a large power tool, but the ingredients remain the same. You have to be able to work with people. You have to have a vision. You have to be trustworthy. You have to be able to build long-term strategic relationships. So eventually, after a long year of making almost no money. And at the time I was doing sketch comedy. So I was also doing some like commercial acting. And really the thing that kept me afloat is I booked a Crest commercial. So I was able to get, thank you, Mom and Dad. So I was able to keep myself afloat a little bit. So I was there. I was at a place called Upright Citizens Brigade for a year and then moved into NBC Universal and kind of took off from there. Was there for 3 years. Working at 30 Rockefeller Center, took a role at a company called Attention. It's a digital media publisher that publishes stories through the lens of purpose. And I've been at Heartbeat for about 10 months on their growth and partnerships team. So it's been a long journey. I don't know if I answered your question.
You did.
But I tried.
You did. No, you tried and you did answer.
The effort was there.
You did
the
it.
The effort was there.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Man. So it's interesting, like, you talk about partnerships, and I'm curious, when we think about the concept of like partnerships for brand activation and whatever way, like, what does that really mean? Like, what are like the, and what would you say like the key elements are of like an effective partnership between, let's say, like the company you work with and in any particular third party or vendor?
Right. So I think it comes down to two components. Good partnerships in business are like good partnerships in life, friendships, relationships, community, things like that. You have to first understand yourself and understand what your strengths are, what are your weaknesses, where are you looking to go. And then when you find a potential partner, you have to understand what they're looking to accomplish, where their weaknesses and strengths are, and see if there's synergy there. So I think it starts with the understanding of what you do well and who you are. If you don't have that, you're gonna be in trouble trying to partner with anyone in any aspect of life. But once you understand that, it makes things easier to identify potential partners. So for example, for Heartbeat, we're a company that's rooted in humor. So if a brand is very, very serious and like can never, ever not take themselves so seriously, and it always has to be very, very hoity-toity, and that's probably not going to work for us, right? If a brand is looking to, and this is any company, if they're looking to more performatively interact with what we would call the multicultural nation that we have here, that's not going to be a good fit for us either. But if a brand is passionate about their consumer base, knows that communicating with lots of different people are important, and is okay with leaning into a little bit of the funnier side of life, that's a good fit for us. And I think you can use that formula in any industry, in any space, right? Understanding yourself and then first identifying other partners and moving through the process like that.
You know, it's interesting. You've been able to like pivot like from brand to brand. Like because I want to say when we connected, you were just like we had a conversation about you being on the pod. Like, this when you said it's been 6 months. We've been in communication for years, but I remember we were kind of like communicating here and there, and it was like I was about to ask you to come on the pod, and you had jumped to another incredible brand. So like, talk to me about like what you've learned role to role and how you're taking those things to heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I think one thing that I've learned role to role, industry to industry, is like relationships are about trust and connection. And ultimately that's about people. And regardless of where you are, if you are confident in who you are and you care about others, things can go well for you. I think one of the things that has been like an evolution for me is being a little bit more comfortable in my skin, and really with my like opinions in board meetings or any type of like larger professional settings. But staying rooted in that that knowledge of like being able to work with people is your primary skill set, particularly in partnerships. But I'd argue being able to work with others is one of the most underrated skills in business. So if you can continue that and push through, I think that's big. But also continue to develop your voice and what's important to you. I think a lot of times underserved communities or people that come from a lower socioeconomic background, we can feel and are often told subliminally, it's early in the morning, sorry everybody, yeah, that like you don't belong in this space, right? And I think that's total, I don't know if I can swear on this, but that's total bullshit, right? Like the fact of the matter, if you look at media right now, a lot of reasons that these large scale media companies are struggling is because they didn't take into account half of the American population, right? Particularly the under 45 crew, right? They don't know how to talk to them because they didn't really even think that they existed, right? People like me and you or other marginalized people or people that came from a lower socioeconomic background, we actually have the sauce, right? Like we are able to communicate with the majority of the actual country in ways that other people aren't. So it's hard. It's not easy. You're not getting a lot of messages telling you that you are enough and your opinion is actually the opinion that people should be following. But really, really try and look at the data and the facts of like, look, one of the reasons why the media space has had some struggles recently is because it's really been built for a country and a industry that was like 30, 40 years ago, right? It never really evolved, right? And we are the leaders of that new space, whether we get recognized for it or not, right? So be confident in that reality.
You know, you've been talking a lot about the through line of everything you've been talking about is people, relationships, trust. Like, what does it look like, and just practically speaking, to even build trust though, right? Because trust is such a loaded, it's a loaded word, sure. It's a loaded concept, particularly in the context of work. What does it look like to build trust between just like two people? Forget a brand to a group of people. Like, just what does it look like to build trust like laterally in your day to day?
No, that's a great question. And I'm going to answer it in the same way that I'm going to answer how brands of the future will create content. So essentially think of it as a dinner party, right? If you and I went to a dinner party and I sat across the table from you and exclusively talked about how great I was, how much money I made, how good looking I am, how successful I am, how perfect my life is, and how you're lucky to hang out with me, most likely that's going to repulse you, is it not? Right? Like, you're not going to want to, any human relationship is not going to want to work that way. But if we go to that same dinner party, and then in that version of me, I hit you up 2 weeks later and try and invite you to a party or invite myself to your party or get you to support some fundraiser of mine, you're gonna be like, nah, bro. Like, nah, I'm good. Nah. But let's go to that same party and I'm asking you questions about you. All right. You got Basquiat and Baldwin back there, right? That's dope. I love the artwork back there. We both have young children. I ask about your kids. We tell stories about what it's like to be a young dad. We connect whether you're into sports or music, and I'm really like investing in you. Yeah, I might bring something up about myself, but I'm really making the effort to connect with you as a person. Like, I'm prioritizing you. It doesn't mean I'm deprioritizing myself, but like, you can be an open and kind person without losing any assertiveness, right? You build that trust. When we leave that dinner party, if I hit you up 2 weeks later, say, hey, man, I got this fundraiser for the kids. We're trying to raise money for this basketball court. Can you come through, try and support this fund? Maybe you can talk about it on the pod, like things like that. You are so much more likely to do that, right? Because I showed that I'm a good human being. I care about you. I don't exclusively think about myself. I think that's the secret sauce for how you build relationships. And I think it's the same way for brands, right? We live in an era where, I heard this recently at a talk, people love brands and movements more than ever, but they hate advertising more than ever. And I don't know if I can blame them for that. And one of the reasons is like that dinner party idea, right? Brands for a long time showed up and said, hey, our product is the best. You're not good enough if you don't have it. Pay us all your money. We don't care about you. Bye. Right? And eventually, especially like the under 45 crew, right, that grew up with social media and grew up with just constantly being inundated by different forms of media, we're over that. And I can't blame us for that. I think that's a good thing. The brands that succeed in the future, and I think this is one of the things that Heartbeat does really well, is you got to practice entertainment instead of interruption, right? You have to, the brand has to be part of something that's entertaining, not just, hey, buy something from me. I'm great, right? So if you show up with, if a brand, I'm making this up, if DirecTV shows up with a program that is all about providing value to a core customer, on the back end, yeah, they may talk about, hey, I have this package if you're interested in purchasing it, but here, I'm really here for you. I'm here to talk to you and build that relationship. You're gonna break through in a much better way. It may take a little bit longer, right? I think patience is an enormous strength for those who have it, and it's an enormous weakness for those who don't, right? Like, you may have some opening wins being really aggressive and impatient, but that's gonna taper off and you're going down, right? So you're going to build really strong brand relationships that, and you'll have these audiences with you for years, right? Because you showed that you cared, right? So I think it's like anything. If you meet people and they don't have any long-term friends, even like their personal life, it's like something to think about.
Yeah, so it's a flag. It's a flag.
Right. It's like, okay. You know what I mean? So like that's a very long way of saying it, but that's the vibe.
No, I appreciate that. And I agree. Like, when you engage in a relationship, just narcissism is unattractive, right? And like,
it's not a good look.
It's not. Right. And like, being able to decenter yourself and having a conversation with somebody and like being authentic in your interest of that, of them and what they're doing. And yes, thank you for asking me about your daughters. And ma'am, I forgot that you also have some young kids as well. So
he's chilling.
Yeah, we gotta talk about that off mic. But yeah, like there's, I think to your point, like the being relationally focused and oriented towards that person, is in parallel powerful for individual relationships as well as brand to consumer relationships.
No doubt.
And in both instances, it's just more sustainable and like successful over time. Right. Like,
right. And it's more enjoyable. Yeah.
No, no, keep going.
It's more enjoyable too. Like, don't forget, at the end of the day, the people making partnership decisions are people, right? They have an opportunity to work with a lot of different partners. A lot of different people have a lot of different things to offer. But at the end of the day, if I don't trust this person, if I actively dislike this person, if I am not 100% sure of their intentions, it's going to impact the decisions that you make, or at least healthy decision makers are making decisions like that, right? So I think it's really important. And I think one thing to think about is, like, in that dinner party scenario, the reason why it works so well in personal or professional relationships is because it's quite rare. People are obsessed with themselves often, right? Like, more often than someone is actively trying to be like, tell me about you, Zach. Like, what makes you tick? I care about you, you know? Like, it's unfortunately rare, right? There's a lot of people coming in and be like, here's my resume. Here's why I went to college. Here's why I'm so great. I go on vacation with this person. I went to college with that. You know, that's more prevalent, unfortunately. So that's a big reason.
Yeah, I mean, and to your point, I also think it's hard to, like, it's hard to fake that. Like, mm-hmm. It's hard to fake caring about somebody for an extended period of time, which is also why it's rare. Because some people I've networked quite a bit, right, over the past decade plus. And so I think about times where it's like, you can tell, like, you know, you ask somebody about themselves and you talk to me and you start telling them about yourself and, like, their eyes glaze off or they look away. Right, you
physically see it.
They really don't care. But they're following the beat that they've been told to follow, and they're waiting for their entry to say why they're so dope, right? But the whole, like, hey, no, I really actually want to learn about you. I want to talk about what it is you have going on. And then whenever I talk about what I'm doing, it's within the context of providing value back to you. So it's still a very, like, service-oriented posture. And that's not, I agree with you, that's not common. And certainly, from a brand perspective, you don't see a lot of brands positioning themselves that way. You don't see a lot of brands really excited about, hey, I'm excited about, like, my excitement is what you have going on. My excitement is about, and when you ask me about what I have going on, I'm going to apply my value prop to what I heard that you're doing and where you might need some help. And now let's have this conversation. And frankly, like, that approach will, even if it doesn't result in, like, a revenue generating opportunity in that moment, at the worst, you've left a positive impression.
Amen.
And you have a contact that you can engage later that is going to have a much higher chance of reaching back to you. And if they don't, it's oftentimes because life just was lifing, as opposed to, hey, no, I'm just not talking to this person. That was unpleasant.
Well, I agree. And I think oftentimes, and one thing that I didn't do well as a young professional, and I have to continually, I'm getting better. I'm an old 35 year old man now, but, like, I'm getting better. I'm still not, I still can catch myself not doing this. But I try to advise, like, fresh out of college people is be patient. Like, as great as one meeting, even if you grand slam knock a big meeting out of the park, it's not only that meeting that's going to get you where you want to go. It's a series of events, right? You have to, like, if you have three great dinner party interactions, and then on number four, or even if it's, you have 10 great dinner party interactions, but on number 11, you show your true colors, like, that's you're gonna get got, right? So it's a consistency, right? You can't be obsessed with, like, the end goal all the time. Like, I think you talked about, like, when there's an etiquette socially where people know that it's inappropriate to be like, I totally don't care about what you're saying. I'm just going to talk about me. They know that, but the body language is not liable. Like, you can tell if someone is not listening to you, It is very, if you pay attention, it's very obvious. But when you actively lean in and people can see it, it fills people up. Like you, it's an irresistible, no one can resist that because it's so rare. Like, so it's so rare that people show a genuine interest in you and have kind of done their homework. So it's an incredibly powerful persuasive tool.
Yeah. You know, at the top, early in this conversation, you talked about you still working through finding and leveraging your voice. I'm sharing mm-hmm. your perspective. You know, was there a moment that you realized like, oh, wow, hold on, I have something to say. It's valuable and people want to hear it? Because, and I asked that because, you know, I think I had something similar in my career mm-hmm. where I was just afraid, Will. Like, you know, I think, you know, coming
straight up.
I was just scared, right? Like, you know, you come from these places where, you know, you don't see a lot of people that look like you in those rooms. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'll never forget, man. I was in this this meeting with the president of this division in this oil and gas company. And I was like 24. Yeah, like 23, 24. And first really big corporate job. I started off as an HR manager at Target stores. So this is my first job where I'm wearing like blazers and jackets and suits, whatever. Sure, and it's Texas. And like, frankly, like
one of the suits. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's Texas. And like the fashion is different than it is in New York down here. Like if you were in mm-hmm. a blazer and slacks and like some monk strap shoes, people think you're overdressing. So, I'm dressed or whatever. And I remember just being terrified, but I spoke up and it went well, right? But it, in that moment, it was so terrifying because I was like, man, what if I say something and they kick me? They like, well, you shouldn't even be here. Get out of here. Or you think about all these things could happen. So like, I'm curious, like, did you have any moment that you realized like, oh, damn, I have plenty of things to share. I need to share them. They're valuable. And people want to hear them.
That's a really good question. I'm going to answer it in two parts. I think in many different, like you, I've been in many rooms where I was the only Black person, only person of color, only person under 45, only person that grew up in a lower socioeconomic class, right? It's very intimidating. Like imposter syndrome is real, right? It is incredibly, like the voice in your head is just not always friendly when you're in those types of situations. I think one thing that changed for me, the first part is, you know, you're in meetings, people are brainstorming, you know, you have ideas, but then that voice in your head creeps in and you kind of keep it down. But then somebody else mentions an idea that was literally the one that you were going to say, and it gets rave reviews. I think that started to change where it's like, no, I do have good ideas, right? Like that absolutely is a good idea that I just had, right? I just got to kind of get over that and let that out a bit. I also think I started doing content on my own. Just doing like a social content series. So I have a background in civics and government outside of just like brand work. And I did a content series called Politics in 60 Seconds, where I broke down political issues for like millennial and Gen Z audience in very, very quick time, right? Very social media heavy, that kind of thing. And it got really strong reviews and got picked up in a couple different publications. And I remember thinking like, oh, so my ideas are legit, right? Like I had I give credit for my wife. She really was the art direction on the piece. But it just kind of changed my like, oh, people that have told me that I don't, my opinion is not worthy or my ideas are not great, like I have validation here, right? And I think like one thing is like, you're going to, coming from places that we've come from, there are going to be people that just don't want you in the room. And even if you have a great idea, they're going to tell you it's not right. Like, I don't want to lie to people. Like that is going to happen. But those are rooms that you shouldn't be in, right? Don't be afraid to leave. Don't be afraid to, if you are in a space that is like harming you and not interested in your talents, leave. Right. Like, you're not going to win over someone who's committed to not listening to you.
You know what? Like, that's so true. And I think there's a danger, right, in using other people's validation as an affirmation of your own voice. Like, yeah, your voice is matter. Your voice matters because your voice matters, right? Like, it's not, you know, it's not like, oh, hey, I said this thing in this group, this room hated what I had to say, or they dismissed what I had to say, or they ignored what I had to say. That's more on the room. That's not on right. you.
And a lot of these rooms have been making wrong decisions for 100 years. Like, so it's like, it doesn't necessarily mean that like, oh, a company that's been in decline for 30 years doesn't think your ideas are valuable. Well, you know,
it might be like, good. Okay. That might be a good thing.
You know what I mean? Like, that might be a good thing. I think one thing that struck me recently, I saw a Stacey Abrams quote where she said, like, and I'm paraphrasing, where it's, she said, the danger of staying in places that don't value you is eventually you start to believe them, right? It's going to impact you. Like, if no human being is strong enough to consistently go to a place every single day where they are not affirmed and oftentimes constantly rejected or mistreated and come out of that totally unscathed, right? And that without any work to do to build up your confidence. So I think be confident in your voice. And if people are not trying to hear that, then take your voice elsewhere.
You know, we've been talking about partnerships, relationships, you know, positioning yourself to be of value to your audience, to that individual, to that, as a brand. You know, I think about smaller shops like Living Corporate. I think about like and other black owned businesses, like oftentimes dying to get a partnership with NBC or dying to get some type of partnership with Heartbeat or something like that. What advice would you give to black and brown founders looking to shoot up, punch up, and really create and build relationships with larger brands, especially like in this economic market where it seems as if there's like a real kind of like retraction and like these major companies are really trying to like double and triple down on the things that they know, quote unquote, work. Like, what have you seen?
Not risk-taking market as much.
Yeah. Probably. Like, what have you seen from your seat that can help smaller companies want to engage, right? I think about the fact that, like, so often, you know, 3% of a major network's budget can, like, change the life of, like, one of these founders, yeah. right? So, like, I'm curious as to what advice or perspective you have for that?
That's a really good question. I would say first, don't forget to be confident in yourself, right? Black and brown founders, like, we represent half of the American population and about 78% of planet Earth, right? So like, don't let a narrative of your opinion is not valuable, your product is not valuable, creep into your head. Like, really work on that. Like, work on your own confidence. And I would say work on, it doesn't always have to be, I want to partner with Google. And if I don't partner with Google, then I am useless. So like, make sure you're staying committed to your audience, and to your team, right? Because that's ultimately gonna deliver for you more than any external partner, as important as they are. Like, that's, I think that's really important. The people that you are able to communicate with are a large part of the future of this country. So feel confident there. Be patient, right? Like, things are not built immediately. And oftentimes, and this is an area where I have definitely struggled in my career, is like, I'm really focused on like, oh, I got to get the next title. And then I got the next salary band, and then I got the next, but I wasn't always focused on like, what do I actually want to do? As opposed to like, I want to boom, boom, boom. I want to move up. It's all linear. I can't have any, you know what I mean? So I would say having enough patience to make the right call for you, not just a call. You know what I mean? I think that's really big. I think building relationships that are not solely based on your financial gain. Like, those are going to be the longer term relationships that matter the most. And in the end, will deliver the most sustainable business opportunities. I think finally, though, don't trip on working with other Black-owned brands, right? Like, one thing I'll say about like the experience at Heartbeat, like I didn't go to HBCU. I don't know what I was thinking, but I feel like I hear a lot from my friends and family that have gone to HBCUs is you have the experience of like you have the reverse experience of like being the only Black person everywhere that you go, where you can just kind of be Zach or Will, or you know what I mean? You feel you don't have to come in and prove yourself on that front. There's just there, you know what I mean? So I think like don't forget the power of working with other Black-owned brands, right? If you two can partner together and grow your base, even if it's not like 3% of a Google's ad budget, right? If you can partner and build that way, I that's going to be the best long-term success. I think it's incredibly important. Black-owned business, particularly Black-owned media, is incredibly important. Right? You're doing a service to your people, right? Storytelling, how people see the world, how people see themselves is incredibly impactful, right? Malcolm X, media controls the mind. So like if you, Black-owned media is incredibly important. So don't be tricked into thinking that it isn't.
Yeah, no, 100%. I also like to your point about, and this is tough, right? Because you think about Black founders, especially in the VC space, like I mean, like a recent report came out that like Black founders receive like 0.23 or something like a percent of all investment. And that number is even like somehow exponentially smaller for Black women founders. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, look, like these founders, we need revenue to survive. Like we're in a capitalist society. Yeah. At the same time, like, what does it look like to build a litany of relationships so that every deal doesn't feel like the one that's going to make or break you at any point in time? But in addition to that, I would say like, we generally, but certainly like for founders, all founders, particularly Black and brown ones, is to like expand your definition of value, right? Value isn't just, hey, they're able to allocate 100 bands for me for this next quarter. Or, you know, it's like, hey, what room can they potentially put me in? What stage, what relationship can they connect me to?
Right.
What marketing opportunity do they have? What case study can I build with them to then put on my website or leverage mm-hmm. to then show other brands? Like, what? How can I use them to attract something else, right? And this, I'm not saying it work for free, like at all, because
don't do that. I mean, don't do that with a major brand. There are certain, there are certain aspects of my career where I have done free or close to free work just for like to get that on my resume so I can move. So like there is that, but I think if you're working with a major brand for free, they're taking advantage.
They're taking it, and that's a tough. That's not right. And it's tough. It's tough because, like, and it's so it's like Will. Honestly, man, early in my journey, I used to get really excited. Like, oh man, like this brand is talking to me, or like they wanna be interviewed, blah blah blah. But like, man, after like the 200th
right
feature or episode activation, or you know, you look at our website now and it's like a whole, there's like multiple tabs of like major brands that like we've had that we featured or whatever. And it's kind of like, okay, this is great. Like happy about that. But like to your point about confidence and being, and knowing kind of like, okay, this part, this season of this has closed. Like we're not going to just do that anymore. Now, if the connection is real, it's authentic, right? If it's real and authentic, then cool. But if someone requests to like work with Living Corporate, you should have no shame in saying, great, here's our options for partnership.
here's our rates.
Yeah, here's right? our rates. Like and, yeah. And I think like there's this some of it for me, I'm not gonna project on anybody else, but for me, there's like this fear of rejection or feeling like you're gonna burn a relationship. And it's like, look, this is not like your mom or your aunt. This is a business, right? Like people engage these things expecting that you're going to come back with some type of rate. And if they don't, then shame on them. Like, that's crazy.
Right. So I think like there's the going back to relationships. This is exactly the same like as a friendship, intimate relationship, or if it's a business relationship. We go to that dinner party scenario and I'm showing interest in you and all of those things and trying to build that relationship with you, and you never, ever, ever, ever reciprocate that with me, or you rebuff, or you are disrespectful to me. I don't need to continue, right? I don't need to throw my drink at you, but I can just talk to somebody else, right? I mean, I think that there is that too. Like you have to identify the right partners too. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I go back to like, I think that it starts with knowing who you are and what you need and what you're looking to do. And if you're confident in that, then you're not going to allow people to be like, yeah, you're getting 25% of your rate and you should feel good about it. You know what I mean? Like you can't be doing that. And I get it. You got to make business decisions, but it's not everything's going to be perfect. I don't want to make it sound like everything is kumbaya all the time and you're only going to work with your best friends and all of those things. But if you're being actively disrespected, you are not required to stay in that space. And I know that that's hard for me. Like I'm a person who still, it's hard to say, it's hard for me to say no. Like I feel like I kind of like owe people things. But it's a powerful, sentence.
It is. Know? No. And I hate it.
There's no doubt about it. I think the inverse of it is you also have to say yes in life, right? Like if you only say no to things, then you don't move forward either, right? You got to have both in your vocabulary. But at some point you have to be able to identify who's right for you, right? Whether that's a personal relationship or that's a business relationship. Like you got to, as much as I believe you should give 51% in relationships, you actually end up getting more back in that way, in my personal opinion. If the other person is not giving 49, then like that's, you gotta show up. Like I can't, you know what I mean? I can't, or at least they're trying to give 51. They're battling me for that 51, you know? That's just ridiculous. You gotta have that self-respect, which is, to be honest with you, is not easy. You know, especially when you come from places that are not like in my career, I have heard the sentence. Yeah, I'm going to spend some time at my parents' lake house this weekend. I have heard that sentence so many times in my career in so many different places. It's just evidence that like you guys are on a different path. Like you have more than one house. Like your family.
First of all, you have a house like.
You
have a house, then let alone you have a house that you go to just for specific occasions. That blew my mind. Like when I was like, man, like we gotta have that's a pot for another time, because like I mean, man, it's so true. Look, because I'm gonna respect your time, so you're at Heartbeat. Have you met Kevin Hart?
I have met Kevin. What does Kevin. It smell like? Very nice man. What is he smelling? You know what? I don't know if I have I registered a smell. I don't know that I did. He's got like a little bit of an aura around him.
I bet.
So like every time you talk with him, I just didn't register the smell. He probably does have a smell. I would imagine very oaky.
Yeah.
Maybe. Very oak.
He's like.
Heavy.
Yeah. I would imagine the same. The thing about it is like, you know, I've like several million people. Like I've been following Kevin Hart from a far, far distance for a while. Not in a stalkery way. He's gotten like really in shape. He looks like really solid. Like when you dapped him up, did you feel the strength?
Yeah, he's a strong dude. He's got like a good sense of like lower sense of gravity, so he can like hit you with one of these and pull you in. Ooh, you know what I mean?
Okay, okay.
But yeah, he's in very good shape. The rumor is like he never really goes anywhere without his trainer, so he's ready to roll.
That trainer is yoked up too. Yeah. He is not playing. So so talk to me about Heartbeat. Like to me, like when I look at your career, right? Like it looks as if almost like you've like I'm not gonna say like you've hit like the end of the rainbow because like of course like look you're 34, you're 35, I'm 34, so it's like there's more to wins to be had. There's your journey is not over, and I'm not gonna say that it's gonna necessarily you just be a Heartbeat forever, but like it does feel as if this is like a serious culmination point. What are you excited about at Heartbeat as you think about like the next, let's just say 12 to 18 months?
That is a great question. I am really excited about a few things. I think our overall content POV of bringing the world together through humor, not necessarily like stand-up comedy, but humor is in like the dictionary definition of she or he was in good humor today, to provide cheer, to bring levity. I think that that's really important at any moment in human history, but I think we would agree that we're in a slightly divisive moment at this time. And I think if we can, if a company can grow to be really, really successful as we are, and to not buy into the, you know, the most divisive content wins narrative, I think that that really, really matters, right? And so that's really important to me, that the work that we're doing is not only financially profitable, which is important, but it's also, I'm not saying you have to fix all the world problems, but don't make them worse. You know, like don't make them worse. Make them like marginally better. I think that's all that anyone can really expect from any individual person or brand, right? I also think growing Heartbeat means growing Black-owned media, right? There's art. I don't know if many things are more important than having large-scale Black-owned media companies where the people in the room making the content, writing the content, directing the content, even not even involved in the on the accounting staff, on the human resources staff, if they represent the multicultural nation that we all live in, and as a it comes from a Black owned place, and we're putting beautiful representation of the diversity of Blackness out on screens and content and podcasts in your ears, that's a really powerful and beautiful thing. So I think if you combine those two aspects, I'm really excited about it.
Will, man, look, it's been a pleasure. I'm so glad we were able to connect. You know, I've been wanting to have this conversation for a while. I love how things worked out, because I would imagine the dialogue we're having now would have been really different had we had it like 2 years ago. So, of course, yeah. Look, man, you're a friend of the show. You're welcome back anytime. Before I let you go, where can people learn more about Will Cooper, the stuff you got going on? Drop it right here. We'll make sure to put the links in the show notes, but you go ahead.
Okay. You can check me out on LinkedIn, posting a lot of the content that we work on at Heartbeat, but also some of my personal stuff as well. And then you can catch me on Instagram at Other Will Cooper.
Love it, man. Will, we'll talk to you soon, baby. Talk to you later, man. Thank you.
All right, brother. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yo, thank you so much for rapping, hanging out with us this week on Living Corporate. Make sure that you check our content out on living-corporate, please say the dash.com. You can see our entire network of shows. We have all types of content that we've been publishing that's all focused on Black and brown folks at work. Different lenses: mental health, career development, executive leadership, right? Wellness, freedom, all types of different lenses, but it's all focused on historically marginalized, oppressed, exploited, underinvested, disinvested people. That's what we're here for. So also click the link in the show notes. Make sure you check out our merch, cop a hoodie. It's getting cool. So make sure you go on the website. If you don't want to cop a hoodie, cop a tank top. You know what I'm saying? Cop a mask. You know what I'm saying? Still wear a mask. Look, come on now. The pandemic is still a pandemic, and I know y'all don't want to act like it is, but people still getting sick out here. Trust me, I got coworkers
people be, okay, I got friends, all right? Be careful, you know what I'm saying? Make sure you get familiar, you know what I'm saying? Take care of yourself. And look, until next time, this has been Zach. Thank you so much for rocking with Living Corporate. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Living Corporate is a podcast by Living Corporate LLC. Our logo was designed by David Dawkins. Our theme music was produced by Ken Brown. Additional music production by Antoine Franklin for Musical Elevation. Post-production is handled by Jeremy Jackson. Got a topic suggestion? Email us at livingcorporatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and living-corporate.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.